Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
To the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. My special guest today is Battalion Chief Andy Starnes from a very large department in North Carolina. He is also the founder at Insight Fire Training, and we will get into some of those details. But he is a busy man, but also one of the things that I love when I have gotten to know Andy over the last year or so is that he's a follower of Christ, he's a father, he's a husband, and he wears many hats. So couldn't wait to have him on the show. And Andy, I know you're here, so welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Donnie. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. And Andy, if you would, just jump right into it a little bit. Talk about your work, all that, you know, the hats you wear as a firefighter, as well as a business owner, trainer, instructor, author. Yeah, give us a little background, if you would.
Well, first of all, I didn't start off pursuing any of this stuff. I'd say the good Lord directed my path into those, because I don't want to give myself credit for those things. But basically, I started chasing my dad around since I was 8 years old. He would come home from working at the full-time job he had, and he would go to the volunteer fire department. So that's how I got into it. Was I went to the volunteer fire department to hang out with him. We'll talk more about how that leads into this later. But basically, that's how I got my interest in the fire department. And yeah. Originally, I grew up playing with jet planes and wanted to be a fighter pilot. And then I took the SAT and got an 800 on it and realized you get 400 points for your name. Maybe this fire department gig's not a bad idea. So, you know, so I started going to school and was hired in 1998. And it'd be my 21 years, something like that. With career, and I've been in it since I was 16 years old, and been blessed to work with some really smart people and pray that it rubs off. And then my father started an applied science project back in 2010 to help volunteers, and I used it as an opportunity or excuse to hang out with him. And I always like to say my fire department trained me, but my dad's organization known as Project Kill the Flashover educated me. I got to hang around with people from all over the world. And it was wow. Such a huge blessing for me, because these people were coming in and giving their time. It wasn't a financial thing. They wanted to make things better and share their expertise. There was no ego. It was all about learning. And that's how I got into thermal imaging. And in that process, somewhere in there, I got promoted to captain. And this is where we'll talk more about that today. But I found out the other side of the fire service in that time frame, which was what people don't talk about, which is the dark side or the other side of leadership. I would go to work and be a Mr. Firefighter and come home and have anxiety attacks and blow up on my wife and my one-year-old daughter. And my wife politely informed me one day. She said, "I thought you said this is the greatest job in the world." I said, "It is." And she said, "Well, I'm telling you, you're coming home and you're taking it out on me and her. She don't deserve it." And she pointed a stack of journals that I've been writing in. There's this whole bookcase full of them back here. And she said, "You say firefighters are hurting. You're writing about it. Nobody's reading them. What are you doing about it?" She turned around and walked out of the room. With all 10 toes broken, I went to a pastor, a counselor, and a doctor. And been there ever since in a position of accountability. And I fell into behavioral health. I fell into my own. Out of brokenness, I figured out there's two things you can do. The fire service can be a spiritual detriment, or it can be an opportunity. And I was letting it be a detriment, and I was ready to give up and realize that's not what we're supposed to do. And started another ministry called Bringing Back Brotherhood, where I basically just started writing out of my own pain, frustrations, and brokenness. And we've reached approximately about 1 million viewers each year, just in basically parable formats. And that's how I got into behavioral health. And that's how, when I started teaching, everywhere I go, I teach about thermal imaging. The first minute, I would talk about suicide, marital issues, PTSD, and say, if you want to learn about what I'm going to teach you today, but you're not right here. Your head and your heart, there's nothing I can do for you. And I said, because 234 firefighters, police, and EMS killed themselves 2 years ago. And I said, who's the first line of defense against that? You and me. And if you got the courage to run into a burning building, but don't have the courage or decency to sit down and have a cup of coffee and shut up and listen and lift up, you don't have to be a trained counselor, because they all want to talk to you first. No offense, before they talk to you, Dr. Donnie.
Mm-hmm.
Because the firefighter can relate. It's empathy, right?
Yeah.
And everywhere I go, somebody meets me for dinner or calls me up and says, hey, I was thinking about suicide, or my marriage is falling apart, and I appreciate what you said, whether it's about your faith, about almost losing your family. Because I think by being vulnerable and open, instead of pouting and pounding your chest like a lot of firefighters do, people see the real side of you, which is what everybody sees, a Facebook side of you. They don't see the side where you struggle, you have pain, you have frustrations, you have the stuff that real people have. The Jerry Springer side of life, I like to say. Everybody has that. It's normal to have problems. It's not normal not to deal with them. And that's how I got into that. And I fell into thermal imaging, literally fell into it by helping my dad and hanging a piece of sheetrock, fell through a floor, ripped my knee in half, and was almost disabled. And my wife politely informed me again. Notice two times my life has changed. Good Lord and my wife, discernment, right?
Yeah.
she politely informed me. She said, we can't live without you or 18% disability, which is what I was going to get. I had no intention of founding Insight Fire Training. She said, go get insurance, make it legal if you're going to leave the house. So I did it. And while I was laid up, I went to school and realized, just like you, when you went to school for your profession, you have to have a piece of paper that says you know what you're doing. It's a credentialing process. There's a difference between certification and qualification, but they certify you saying you've passed a written standard. Well, in the fire service, to work in thermal imaging, you have to have 0 hours of training, where in industry, you have to have a minimum of 32 hours of training. And I like to compare it to this. When you get married and you become a husband or a dad, what's the requirement on training on that? No.
Right.
What did you have, though? And that's how this happened. And then fast forward to where we are now, we've been to almost all 50 states, 9 countries, and we taught 20 countries online last year. We taught over 10,000 students virtually, and taught a few thousand in person, and I am blessed to work with some really great, passionate guys that my organization requires a values test to work with me. It's kind of like my friend Cody Treschel from Brothers in Battle. He believes in a values system first, then a skill set second.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm blessed to hang out with those guys, and they hold me accountable. We encourage each other, and that's the short version. I'm married, be 15 years married this year. She's been putting up with me, and we have a 10-year-old beautiful little daughter who's about to be 11. In the preteen years, Miss Emma, and her name is short for Emmaus, which means the road or journey. And she can tell you more about that in her own little interview. She can talk more than me. She gets it honest. That's it.
All right. I appreciate the great overview.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, you talked about when you first got into it in the leadership position. Mm-hmm. And the struggles, the dark, I think did you call it the dark side of leadership? Did I take that?
Sure.
Yep. Is that, what happened? I mean, how did you address that? Yeah,
I had a naive view of it. I had some really good people in my life for leadership positions to look up to. I don't know about you, but I did the same thing a lot of young people do. I looked at the good side of them and all their successes, but I never paid attention to when they stepped aside and whispered in somebody's ear, or they stepped in another room and shut the door, and why they shut the door, or when they disappeared for a week or two, why they did. I never saw the other side of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I got into the position, then I sought those people out who I should have listened to before, which was, you know, my dad, Alan Brunicini, lots of others. And hang on 1 second. You want to be on the podcast, baby? Come over here and say hey to Dr. Donnie. This is my little girl, not so little anymore.
And this is Emma, right?
Yeah.
Hi, Emma.
She's an early riser, as you can tell.
That's good. Hey. Hi. Hey, tell me a couple favorite things about your dad. What do you love about your dad the most?
Well...
Mm.
that he's silly and he will always do anything for me. And that I love him and he loves me.
That is perfect.
Silly part.
Probably. And also he brings me muffins from Hannah's Coffee.
Yeah, I'll do that.
That is my youngest daughter's name, Hannah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And
I'm going to talk to Dr. Donnie, okay?
Love you, Daddy.
Love you, too. My door is always open, as you see.
I love that. And
your teacher, she came in.
I noticed how she said goodbye to you.
Mm-hmm. Always yep. does.
That's a learned skill, right?
Yes, sir. Man, etiquette, yes, sir.
Yeah.
We're big on that here. I believe in respecting everybody, and you can't earn respect unless you give it. So we teach her some things I was taught, long time ago, obviously, but you've got to treat people the way you want to be treated and try to show her that in the way I treat her mother and treat everybody else. And especially I tell her it's really hard when you don't feel like it,
Yeah.
Not a great day.
Yeah. But yeah.
She's a blessing and she's a lesson and accountability for me too.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Take me back for our listeners. Is that, those times when this work life, if you'd call it imbalance, right? Because I talk about that so much in my work, in my workshops, is about, as most first responders, it's those struggles that we have on the job and the things like that. And we bring them home. And, fortunately, your wife quickly pointed that out to you. And then you said you went and talked to, I think, a pastor, a doctor, you sought help. But what did it take you very long to realize that, hey, this is my wake up call? Or what was that period of time like? And what went through your mind, as in what gave you that push to actually reach out to others and ask for some help?
Well, I guess you have to understand too that my dad had been divorced I was 17, and I witnessed all of that and what that did to my family. And then at that point in our marriage, I had seen enough firefighters get divorced, and we had just had a walk where she and I used to walk all the time, and I was telling her how I was shocked that a particular individual that I trusted cheated on his wife. And she turned and looked at me and said, "All men do it. It's only a matter of time before you do it to me." Mm. And here's why. Been married 3-4 years at that point. And what I didn't know is I hadn't earned her trust, because when I went to work, I behaved completely different than I did at home. Played the fireman role, where you've got the bad language and heavy drinking and looking at things you shouldn't look at and doing all the things some of us have done, and come home and try to be a good, godly husband. Well, the Bible says you can't be a double-minded man, and that's what I was. And I was struggling with that. And that's why I was coming home, because she viewed that that other guy was going to win out. And the wake-up call for me was, when she said that, was I've had friends who didn't get this wake-up call.
Yeah.
They came home to an empty house, and their house had foreclosure. So I viewed it as a blessing. Yeah, it was a humbling moment, absolutely, but you got to realize I had been doing that for 3 years before I listened too. It wasn't like I did it one time and she said, "Hey, you need to straighten up." No, I had been, as my uncle used to say, you pound on a tough piece of meat long enough, it becomes tender. I had been being pounded on, and I was turning around and taking it out on them.
Yeah.
Which is always like to say, we'll be nicer to a perfect stranger if they ask for directions than we will our own family, because we think our family knows better. Tell them perfect little directions, but you tell your family, just go down here and turn left at the tree. We have to realize that, I made a commitment to my wife and my daughter first. Firefighters get very hung up in the commitment to the job and throw away the commitment to their family in the process. And they should realize that those two go hand in hand. If you are very dedicated and committed as a husband and a father, or a wife and a mother, then you'll be even more dedicated as a firefighter. It's not contradictory. It's when you get them out of balance, and as Rick Lasky says, you put your fire department family over your your real family. And what you end up doing is retiring from the fire department and living in a shoebox apartment and drinking a fifth of liquor every day alone.
Yeah.
And that's not your that's not your point in life, to end up alone and throw away your pension and your family. The greatest save you'll ever made, doctor, is your family, not somebody in a burning building. And that for me was, okay, do I want to go through a divorce? Do I want to do to my daughter what I saw done to me, what I've seen done when I went into broken homes? No, I don't want to do that. Did it hurt? Yeah. But I know more firemen who are firefighters who won't go get help because of pride. They don't want anybody to know. They don't think they need help. And they only find out too late. I can't put your house out or save your house if you call me if it burned down to the foundation and then call the fire department.
Right.
There's nothing left to say. It's late. Start over. So I was thankful that she called me out while we still had something to say. You know, that's where, I mean, but yeah, it's a long process. And by the way, you can hang a thing around my neck says under construction. I'm nowhere near where I need to be.
Should we bring your wife into this conversation?
Yeah, she'd gladly comment. She doesn't like being on camera.
Andy, talk to me about that change though. You know, so when you felt, you know, she brought it to your attention and you're bringing all these struggles home, how did you begin to make that change? How did you begin to start being nicer? You know, as you mentioned, like the strain, you know, as a stranger or something like that, but what was it inside of you to help motivate that change?
Well, I think it's good Lord convicting me, number one, because we wouldn't have had a daughter if it wasn't for a change in our faith. Because you got to understand, when we got married, my wife said, I never want to have children. Because she'd been married before and she had a very, very bad experience. And I didn't know at the time she didn't trust me. You heard why.
Yeah.
And then later, when all this conviction starts, I start feeling bad about my behaviors. I start realizing I'm not who I say I am. I'm out of shape. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. You know, I go to a fire and wearing one air pack, one bottle, and I'm exhausted. I'm like, man, you know, all these things you say you are and you're not, you know, like I said, the Facebook profile,
mm-hmm.
perfect life, and you don't have the perfect life. Nobody does. I was under what they call conviction. And I think that's the good Lord working on me. That's what my dad said anyway at that point. And then I started seeking out wise counsel. I started talking to people at church. I started talking to other firefighters I respected, not 3-year firefighters, but people who are about to retire, been around the block, PhD in life. My mm-hmm. next door neighbor who had been married for 64 years and was a World War mm-hmm. II vet. I talked to those people.
Yeah.
And I sought out their advice and I just sat there and said, hey, tell this dummy what you think. And what I learned was, you know, you can't be two people. You will always be in conflict. And eventually one will win. And my wife was betting that the bad guy at work was going to win.
Mm-hmm. And
I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be who I say I am. Now, am I 100% who I say I am? No, I fail every day. I'm a flawed piece of dirt the good Lord picked up and washed off. For some reason, I have a wonderful wife and a wonderful daughter and a life that I don't deserve. And I look at that every day and say, I have this. I should be thankful for that. People are praying for the problems I have.
Yeah.
Well, for me to realize that, and when I started going through that process, it was convicting. It's not easy. People think, oh, well, you change. No, you don't just flip a switch and change. You ask an alcoholic how they get into sobriety. It's a daily battle. You ask anybody who changes their marriage or changes their life, it's a daily battle. It's a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And thankfully that woman in there is the one that keeps me accountable. She reminds me if I stray too far and you start to drive into the other lane, you know, a car has these little sensors now that warns you.
Yeah.
He warns me, hey, you're getting out of balance. In marriage ministry, they call it love deposits and love withdrawals. You're never balanced. I know your title is get balanced, but you're mm-hmm. never balanced. You're either overdrawn or over-deposited. Yeah. My goal is to stay over-deposited so that when I have a month of being overdrawn, that when I come back and say, okay, I had 3 weeks of working both jobs and haven't really been here.
Yeah.
What do I need to do to be here? Do I need to spend 8 hours in this office with the door shut while they're in the other room? No. I need to be plugged in to them, not to this thing that says how much screen time I got. Yeah, watch The Social Dilemma. That'll convict you. I look at it differently. I look at the process differently. I look at it as it's an opportunity to change. As my neighbor said, you can choose. You can make a wise choice now or be made to make a desperate choice later. I would rather make that choice and say, I still have a marriage and a life and a child to have, to enter. And for me, that process has been a very humbling process. And if you really want to do it, it's like I told you about the marble analogy.
Yeah.
Every day, whether you realize it or not, those of you who like to save money or spend money, you got 86,400 seconds and you can't save a one of them. You have to spend them. How are you going to spend them? Am I going to spend them in front of this computer, typing and chatting with you and telling you how wonderful everything is while they're in there and things are not wonderful? And I'm going to do an hour in here. I'm going to get my stuff done and we're going to spend all the time together on the way to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You have to balance that out. Because when she says, put your phone down and play with me, or I don't get to spend time with you, or you're always on the phone, or you never play with me, those things hurt, and they're true. Because a 10-year-old has no filter. No. She puts it right here. See the chink in the armor, right between the ribs. Pow, right in there. You know, yeah. And you go, ow, that hurt.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for the rambling, but it's just marriage and family is one of the most important things you can have in life next to your faith. And the world has second placed it for the sake of career, for the sake of whatever, ambition, greed, success. But it means nothing if you have no one to share it with.
So true. So true. Andy, have you ever, I apologize for asking, because have you ever attended one of my workshops at any of the events?
No, listened to you on your podcast and started following you online. And been to it. Now, my wife and I have participated in, we've been to marriage ministry getaways. We've been in accountability groups and done things like this on boundaries, on work-life balance. And I've done my own studies with them and taught them at Fellowship Christian Firefighters about here's what I did wrong. Here's what worked for us. Here's what didn't work, you know.
Yeah.
Then a clock formation where it shows one hand is your arm, one hand's the other, and you're controlling the clock, and that really doesn't feel good. I've been following you or / stalking you online for a little while.
And I appreciate all your comments too out there, because we all learn together. We all learn together and try to encourage each other to practice. And my definition of work-life balance in my research, a lot of my research is underneath the umbrella of self-care, and that's sort of the underpinning of how do we get a balanced life. One thing is we got to make sure that, we take care of ourselves, which in all aspects of our lives include, and all of that. But I've always defined work-life balance as mostly in a question, are we aligning our day-to-day behaviors with our priorities in life? And as you say, it is the Get Balanced program. Getting balanced is not a destination, because balance ebbs and flows, because our priorities change. It can change any minute. And it's just like we're recording a podcast right now, but if something critically would happen right at this moment for either one of us, our priorities shift.
Yeah, be like, bye.
Yeah. Right. And it's the same way when we get working too much. Well, we have to do this. We have to do this. And you mentioned it earlier, is that, it's all about choices. We choose, we do get to choose our priorities, and a lot of times and firefighters and other first responders, we get in that mode of we're running in this race of life. I don't like hearing when people are racing to retirement. It's like, boy, we got to enjoy the journey. We got to enjoy our time getting there. And so when I talk about, are our day-to-day behaviors in alignment with our priorities in life, how do you discern and do you take time to reflect on how you're on your current priorities in life. You know, what's who and what is most important to you right now? And you ever check yourself on how's my behavior doing with those priorities?
I think, you know, checks and balances are a big thing, because you're not, in my opinion, I'm not smart enough nor wise enough to constantly keep a gauge of where I'm at. So having wise counsel, having a discerning, godly wife who calls me out or says, hey, put the brakes on, is one way. The other side is having what I call, Andy Andrews calls it a board of directors. I wrote something about it a few years ago, where you have a group of people from broad, diverse spectrums of life, like my neighbor who was married for 64 years, that you talk to on a regular basis, and you consult when you're facing those struggles. They may not be a licensed counselor, but they may have faced things that you've never faced, right? And those are the people that I call or talk to regularly. I had breakfast with one of them yesterday on the way home. He's a retired battalion chief, and I used to seek him out quite regularly until the corona stuff hit. We're just now trying to get caught back up. We call it coffee, Christianity, and cholesterol. We'd sit down and eat, and crack, you know. But that's the first thing, is because I'm not wise enough or smart enough just to have a system that keeps me in check every day. I'm not a Jocko Willink that 4:30 I'm out of the bed and I'm a machine. I'm not. You know, I am as inconsistent as I can be in certain behaviors. But the consistent part should be your values, your principles, and how do you keep those aligned? I think, honestly, if you don't have a solid, transcendent moral anchor that says where you stand and what you stand for, you're in trouble. Because the world says truth can change based on the election, based on whoever, based on the book you read. I think it's hilarious that ethics has a revised edition. You know, why does ethics get revised? Why is truth relative? Why is it okay to be this kind of dad this generation and another kind of dad and this? No, you know, there are certain transcendent moral values that are 100% absolute truth, and the world doesn't want to hear that. There is good, there is evil, and there's a way to keep yourself in between and stay between the lines on the road. Just don't repaint the lines. When you write a book, Doctor, I don't have the right to read the book and define for you what you were trying to say. I can interpret it my way, but in the end, if that's not what you meant, you can correct me on it. Mm-hmm. The world says, no, Andy can tell the author what it means. And that's dangerous. It's foolish. It's reckless. And it's the cause of people getting astray, looking at Facebook and saying, well, their life is better than mine. I will get rid of my marriage. I don't need to take care of my kids. I can do these things. I can go. I can do whatever I want without any cost. No, there's a tremendous cost. And firefighters should know it better than anybody, because if you're busy and you run calls, you see broken homes, you see dissolved marriages, you see abusive relationships, you see overdoses, suicide, murders, the worst of humanity you see, and you come in and you bring a sense of normalcy back to a chaotic situation. You bring compassionate care to no matter who it is, no matter their race, their religion, their belief system, you treat them equally, and yet we go home and treat our family unequally. How hypocritical is that?
Right.
We go down the street and die in a burning building for someone we may not even know or may not even like, but then we would abandon our families at home? You people may not like to hear this, but if you abandon your wife or your husband and your kids for the sake of another lifestyle or another person, not because of something terrible, but just because you want to pursue someone else, and then you want me to trust you with my life to follow you into a burning building or an ideal age immediately dangerous to life and health situation, I'm not following you. Because if you will abandon your spouse and your children, you sure as heck will abandon me.
Yeah.
Because you've showed me what your priority is, which is you and you alone. So the badge and the uniform is nothing more than basically a way to say, look at me. When in reality, the badge and the uniform is a commitment to your sacrifice, to be a servant. And that's the first commitment you made when you got married. The first commitment you made when you had a kid was, I'm not first anymore. It's always, it's for them. But what about your spouse, your children? What do they get? How much of the, you talk about work-life balance. In a 30-year career, I'll spend 12 years away from my family. 12.
Yeah.
What am I going to miss in that? Thankfully, I got a wife that comes to the fire station. Thankfully, I have a wife that constantly calls, and we travel together, and we do things. We try to soak up every single second. But to keep in checks and balances, you have to have people around you that are the same type of values that keep you in. If you have one that's running over here and doing things they shouldn't, you're going to do what they do. Mm-hmm. Dad says you're in your environment, environment will dictate your environment, as Robbie Zacharias says, your I environment inside of here. You hang around people who drink and cuss and do all that stuff all the time, you will drink and cuss eventually. That you will not bring them up, they will drag you down. Okay. Right. You have to have accountability. You have to have good firefighters around you to be a great firefighter. You have to have good husband role models around you to be a better husband. You know, those are the things that I've learned. I'm not smart enough or good enough to be a better person alone. Or Jesus wouldn't have had to die on a cross if I was good enough to get my way into heaven. He right. said, "You can't get there." You know, got to help this poor bald guy. You know, I need all the help I can get. You know, so that, I believe if you want to stay in the lanes of what your value system is, you better have a system of accountability and responsibility with people who keep you there. You know, you got to have that. That's just my firm belief. A group, honestly, I have a group called Slack. I don't know if you use it. It's a business app, but it's basically a private Facebook group. I've got 12 guys from all around the country, from fire chief to firefighter, and we chat like schoolgirls every day on that app. That's my virtual peer support group. We call ourselves the Firehouse Kitchen Table. We talk about all our problems, marriage, family, fire department, and guess what? None of this ends up on Facebook. We don't use Facebook or Twitter as our counselor. We don't. And these guys, if you don't answer, they call you. I flew to New Jersey to go to one on birthday. I mean, this is how much these guys mean to me.
That is awesome.
And they're all out of state. They're not here.
Yeah.
They're my board of directors. They're the ones I say, "Hey, guys, you ever seen this before? Because I have no clue how to handle this."
And that's powerful, Andy.
They pray for us. They donate money, and they never ask for a kudos, an award, or nothing, Doctor. Yeah. They are the biblical definition of what a brother is, and I'm thankful to have them.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that. You mentioned at the beginning of this piece of it is those guiding principles in life. Where did yours come from that you have today?
I like to think that you get a lot of your guiding principles from who you were brought up with. But in the end, a lot of people you see come from broken homes and turn out amazing. Some people come from bad situations and turn out better than some of the most well-raised people who have every opportunity. Why is that? Because God allows everybody the same chance, no matter if you're the poor or the pastor, or, you know, the addict or the country club guy. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can all seek out that same value system. When I was talking about the dark side of leadership, you know what I think is hilarious? That as much as leadership is needed, if they would quit giving inspiring quotes without the background behind it, and the frustration and the fight behind it, and share more of their testimony of what they went through to be a great leader, what it cost them, the fights they fought, then you would see what did they hold on to. When you talk about values, find somebody who's been through hell and held on to their faith and held on to their family and go talk to them. And say, why did you hold on? Why did you not quit? Why did you not give up? And you will find a common thread in all of them. Whether you believe as I do or not, it's a transcendent moral foundation that they said, this is the right thing to do, or is in my belief, this is what God wants for my family, my life, is everybody in that book went through absolute teetotal, you know what, frustrations, persecution, adversity. None of them walked an easy road.
Yeah.
None of them.
Yeah.
And leadership books talk about all the awesome things, and leadership is awesome. But you need to understand that there is hard times and good times. Just like you talked about ebbs and flows with balance, your EKG, if you look at your heart, has ups and downs. So does life. What you want to avoid is flatline. Okay? you don't want to be consistently flat. You're dead. So
I try to avoid that every day.
Yeah, absolutely. But the point being is those priorities came from the good Lord, and I wasn't smart enough to get them that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think 5 years of prison ministry with my church taught me more about things that I didn't realize when I went and saw what the world considered, you know, humanity's worst, locked up in prison. And these guys had a stronger faith than I did. Mm-hmm. And I said, why do they have something that I don't have? And I realized they had lost everything. Some of them hadn't had a visit in 20 years.
Wow.
And the only thing they could hold on to was either his hope or it was hopelessness. And I said, if you take away a person's hope, they're done. And I said, God, I want that kind of faith, but I don't want to go through what they went through to get it.
Yes. Yes. A couple things I want to ask you on, gosh, I got so much I want to ask you at this point. Let's keep it on faith for a second.
All right. I got coffee. I'm good.
All right. Is that in the workplace?
Mm-hmm.
It is, and in our culture of our country,
mm-hmm.
it is, I'll be nice. It's frowned upon to so-called talk about faith or to share faith, express faith,
yes, sir.
All that kind of stuff. And how do you wrap your arms around that? Because for me, you know, I teach part-time at a Catholic university, okay. Right? And it's like, I still have to be careful. Supposed to be. Can you imagine that? Still have to be careful.
I left the previous church because I had to be careful what I said about the Bible in a church.
Yeah. So it's like, with that said, how do you balance that out to where, because you're a man of God. It's, you express it, you show it, you try to live it. Is it more mostly about just living by, leading by example? Or
I think the term leadership, like we talked about earlier, is what you have to be careful in faith, because Jesus only asked us to do one thing.
Follow
him.
Yeah.
He didn't say follow the church. He didn't say follow the president. He didn't say follow you at your teaching. He didn't say to, you know, whichever pastor you follow on TV. He said follow me. Everybody else picks out imperfect Christians and blames the faith, whether you're a Christian, you're a Muslim, or whatever faith you choose. They pick the abusers of that faith and judge it. And Ravi Zacharias said it best, never judge a philosophy or a belief system by the small percentage you choose to abuse it, like what the world's doing to the police right now. You know, 1% of the police doing all these bad things, 99% doing good, let's judge the whole thing. Well, that's the very definition of being prejudiced and racist.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that. In faith, in general, if I follow what I'm supposed to follow, and you said, how do I do that in the workplace because it's frowned upon? St. Francis of Assisi had a great statement, one of countless many, which is, in all things, go and preach the gospel. And if necessary, use words. So,
absolutely.
Well, so what does that mean? That means your actions, your very things that you do, should show what you believe. You know, the faith, the works and faith go together, not separate.
Mm-hmm.
So you should be doing good things. You should be giving. You should be kind to others, especially when it's hard. And when you're not, you should apologize and go to your brother or sister and make amends for it. Because trust me, if you want to know what I do more than anything, I apologize and I call people when I mess up.
Yeah.
Because I do. I can be in my house, doctor, I can be right or I can be happy. Guess which one I choose to be?
Happy.
Yeah, right. So point being is in this world, the fact that they're trying to suppress your faith is an oxymoron, because we're founded on faith principles, but nobody wants you to share your faith because it dictates theirs. Or I can tell you, you can go out every day and live your faith out and never offend a person by never speaking a word. But the minute you open your mouth, you're in trouble. And I'm not allowed to evangelize or share my faith at work by words, right? Mm-hmm. Not supposed to endorse politics or anything. And I get that. And I respect that. But that doesn't mean I can't live out my faith by how I treat people, how I forgive people, and as how, especially how I treat people who have wronged me.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Vengeance versus kindness. Forgiveness versus, no, I'm going to wish, you know, the world's end on that person. I always, like I said earlier, I think it's a great contradiction that firefighters will die for somebody in a burning building, but we wouldn't pee on the guy from A-Shift if he was on fire. That's wrong. You don't like that guy? Why? Because, well, he doesn't relieve me till 8 o'clock in the morning. And then, well, maybe he's going through a bad marriage and he's having to get his kids to school. You ever asked why he's late? No, he's just a piece of dirt. He's sorry. He's a slug. Well, yeah. Why don't you? You didn't get that way overnight. You know, you can exercise your faith in this world by doing good things. Now, when you talk about speaking out, yes, and you better not have a uniform on or something that can tie you to it, because then they're going to say, I mean, the chief at Atlanta Fire Department several years ago was fired because he wrote a book called Who Told You You Were Naked? And he had quoted scripture in it, but he signed the book as the fire chief. That endorsed it. And you can't endorse a particular faith from a non-secular belief system. And you shouldn't be surprised that the world goes after faith, because they don't like things that tell them what they can and can't do. If you don't believe that, look at the since February to now of our entire free country being told, you can't go out, you can't go here, you got to wear a mask. How well have we behaved? We have not, no matter what belief system you have. We act like my 10-year-old when we tell her to go do something. I told you go do that. I told you go do that. I told you, yes. The fifth time. I told you go do that. We act like children.
Yep.
But our faith should be our basis. If you build a house, the most important part is what it stands on, and it's the foundation. And I think too many people, including myself in certain points of my life, as Ravi Zacharias said, we have our feet firmly planted in midair when it comes to a foundation. We do. Our morals are something that move and change and ebb and flow. And you can't do that.
Yeah.
Because you will never know where you stand, and neither will the people who trust you. Because then they'll begin not to trust you, because they'll say, that guy is either bipolar or something's wrong with him, because this week he was this guy and this week he's this guy. He's Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to live out what you believe. And it doesn't mean you can't, you know, be the person you're called to be at work. Mm-hmm. You have to be respectful of your organization's rules. Don't get me wrong, but they don't have the right to infringe upon your rights, though. You know, and that's the biggest issue right now is apathy. Christians in general will not stand up for their beliefs when it comes to being called out for something. And everybody else will, but we won't. And I'm telling you can stand up without being evil, without being hateful, and the world can learn to disagree once again, agreeably. Because if you can learn to disagree without hating each other, without saying just because I disagree with you doesn't mean you and I can't be friends. I have atheist friends. I have Muslim friends. I have all kinds of different friends and different beliefs and backgrounds because I respect their right to do so. Does that mean I agree with everything they do? No. But I can still love them, appreciate them, and respect them.
Right.
I'm not changing who I am for the sake of their beliefs. That's not just compromise. As we say at work, you're folding like a cheap lawn chair. Anytime anybody comes to you and challenges your values, you back down and cower in the corner. No.
Yeah.
You are who you are because of what you believe. So stick with it and they'll respect you for it.
Absolutely.
Sorry for the mini sermonette, but.
No, that's what I'm searching for. Searching for. Love your philosophy. Very, very wise. Very wise chief. Very wise man. I want to shift gears a little bit and pull you right back into talking with your daughter, Emma. Yes, sir. As the listeners didn't see, but I could see on video here, is that she came into your home office.
Yes, sir. Used to be her bedroom. She got promoted and I got her bedroom.
Home office. She jumps on your lap, wraps her arms around you, gives you a kiss, cheerful as can be. That bond, mm-hmm. I know it. I have it with three daughters.
Awesome.
I I wrote a book, Lead with Balance, about it. My book, four pillars, faith, family, career, and health. And it was about that, right before I started working with the fire service industry. But it's that bonding that you have with her. What advice do you have for firefighters that, you know, they may not have that bond? And maybe if you could talk a little bit, Andy, about, did you, you know, when you, at the beginning of the podcast, you talked about how you came home and you brought your struggles home and you argued with your wife and you weren't probably very patient with your one-year-old at the time, Emma, and things like that. But how did you develop this? I mean, I could see it. Your face lit up. I mean, you know, love of your life right there in your lap, right? And what advice do you have for dads out there? And sometimes, and if you could speak of, even divorced dads that don't get to see their children as often, not, you know.
Yeah, that's so hard.
What advice do you have about how to help, you know, pull those kids into you and create that special bond? Because as we know, that father-daughter, it is such a special bond.
Well, a friend of mine who has a ministry, it's really more of a fire department thing, but I call it a ministry because he calls it Fit to Fight Fire. John Spira has some really inspirational stuff he puts out. And one of the things he has is a picture of a little kid looking up at a firefighter and says, be the firefighter they want you to be or think you are, right? Hmm. So whether you're a single dad, whether you're, you know, married and have lots of kids, or you're like us, we have one child and that's our miracle baby, that's yours for a time, for a very small portion of time. And when you get a little bit older, you can either realize it too late that time has been lost, or you can do like I've done all of a sudden and said, man, time is flying. I held her in my arm not that long ago. She was 20 inches long. She fit between my wrist and here. And my wife had every risk factor, and Emma was born perfectly healthy. Hmm. My wife was 40 years old when Emma was born. And I realized, here's this perfectly healthy baby. My wife went through all this. I don't deserve this. I've got friends who couldn't have kids. I've got friends who've lost kids. And I'm like, why am I getting this opportunity? Well, maybe I need to appreciate it. Maybe I need to realize it is a gift and I only get to hold it for a little while.
Yeah.
If you watch that movie Courageous, when he loses his daughter when she was 7, the pastor says, you have a choice to make. Be thankful for the 7 years you had, or be miserable for the rest of your life that you have without her. And I have to realize that no matter what time I have with Emma, as my mentor told me, he said, from 0 to 12, you're the hero. From 12 to 20, you're the enemy. Get ready for 12 to 20. But don't worry, they come back. I want to be there for her. And I can't be there for her if everything I have, whether it's this stuff here, or the pursuit of knowledge, pursuit of success, whatever it is, if that puts her second and she sees that. Kids are smart. They figure it out. They don't have to have a PhD to realize that daddy thinks the fire department's more important than me. Daddy thinks his thermal imaging pursuit's more important than me. When you're with your kids, be with your kids. And the hardest thing, honestly, is this little device right here.
Yeah.
This is an amoral device.
The phone?
It could be evil. And what you don't realize is that it owns you. You don't own it. And how you can fix that, and which I'm working on right now with my wife, is putting it down and out of my line of sight.
Yeah.
Because if it goes off, it's like that cartoon my daughter had. It bleeps and goes, hey, I figured out how that phone works. It makes a noise. You run to it and it tells you what to do. No, I need to be involved. There's a devotional I keep in my Bible. It says, where's your dad today? It says, he's just home. And it talks about a dad just sitting in a recliner with this vegetative look on his face, not active, not engaged, not involved. He's just there. He's present, but he's not involved and engaged in his family's life.
Yeah.
Be the dad that you were called to be. Be the mom you were called to be. Because only you out of 7 billion people were chosen for that kid. And that's a pretty high honor. And that's a lower chance of being that person than is winning the lottery,
mm-hmm.
becoming a firefighter, all these different things that are hard to do, you are their parent. And parenting is not for cowards, especially for single parents that are having to do both jobs alone. But when they do have that opportunity, they need to realize that this window is very, very narrow and it only lasts for a little while. And I'm seeing that in my own life. It feels like I'm trying to hold on to time and it's just going right through my fingers. You're talking about racing to retirement. I have 3 years and 14 days until I can retire. And everybody always says they count them down. I count them down for a different reason. I need to realize in 3 years and 14 days I have left, I should enjoy every single one of them, good or bad.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to get to do that again, probably.
Yeah. You know?
So what about the 18 years you have with your kid? Or as my buddy said, you really got 12 because they quit listening to you at 12. You know.
All right, I'm going to challenge you on that, Andy, and I want to challenge your listeners. I'm going to challenge you on that. I know what you're talking about, though. And I know what he's talking about.
You got three times the amount.
I know what it is, but I'll tell you. My two youngest daughters, they're 16 and 17, just about 18, right? Almost 17 and 18, really. They're juniors and seniors. But I'll tell you, it just seems to be getting better. And I involve myself with them. You know, and they have very busy schedules and everything with school, cheerleading, soccer, speech and debate. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But it's like one of those things to where it's like, like you say, get involved. I'm there. I'm supportive. I have those great little conversations. I have those coffee dates. You know, take them out to dinner. You know, we have family dinners, you know.
Yeah.
Which is hard. I mean, you know, try to get a couple in each week to where we're actually all, you know, right now all four at the table, which is challenging. But I'll tell you, it can get better. So I don't want you to think that it's a lost cause once they hit that teen year.
It's a lost cause, but yeah. I do think that what you have is a lot more of a gift and a blessing and a rarity than you realize. I talk to more firefighters that have the opposite because of they didn't invest like what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you invest in a particular market, you expect a return. And what really hurts is the families that invested hard, just like you're supposed to, and their kids still took a left turn.
Yeah.
You know, because I know some good, amazing parents who are going through hell on earth with their children right now.
Yeah.
They did everything that you would think would be right, and they're having to put their kid in a group home. They're having to do all these terrible things that nobody should have to do, and they are still loving that child. So when I said earlier, people are praying for the problems you have. Mm-hmm. You remember that those three girls you have, that's a huge blessing because not everybody gets to have that moment where they're all 16, 17, still hanging around listening to dad. Now, I've got a buddy I work with. He's got three. He's got just like you. He's got two girls and one son, and he has the exact same relationship you have, and they're all teenagers.
Yeah.
But he is a dad like you. From the very beginning, he has been, as my friend Wallace Martin said, I never chased a dollar, but I chased a difference. If my son was a Boy Scout, I was a Boy Scout. If he was into this, I was into that. And every picture you see, he's there. And
yeah.
He made sacrifices to be there. And I think that's the difference is, are we present enough in their lives that when they look back, they're going to forget the Nintendo or the Xbox. They're not going to forget when you were there. When their first boyfriend broke up with them.
Right.
You're not going to forget
them. Right.
And it really aren't. And those are gifts of your physical presence, not a presence in a box. That's the most valuable thing you and I have as dads is giving our spouse and our children our full, undivided, present attention. And that is the most difficult thing in this world because this world wants to own your attention more than anything.
Yes, it does. And like you said, putting that phone down when you're in front of them, mm-hmm. yeah, managing that better is something I think we all can do better. And it definitely helps in mm-hmm. bringing that attention to where someone feels that you're listening to their communication and you're watching them and you're not distracted. Andy, I know I put out a post on my Work Life Wednesday tip of the week, and you shot a video of yourself talking about it. But I wanted to ask you specifically if you would share with the listeners, what are some of those things that you need to do now that you might not be able to do in the near future? Do you have anything on that list that you really want to be able to cover, whether it's with family or anything in your life that you need to do now, that because that window of time may be closing on you?
Yeah, my daughter will be 11 in November. One of the things that we decided on as of last year was my wife went ahead and retired, and she works with me, not for me. She said, I'm tired of having bosses. You can't be my boss, but I'll work with you. She runs the house. She does homeschooling for Emma. Emma's now homeschooled, obviously, and she manages the bills. She is basically the CEO of our household. Mm-hmm. So she's quite busy. So having two full-time jobs that I have to rely extremely on her. We work as a team. We have calendar meetings. We talk about what's going on. And the thing that I have to realize is that Emma, as she transitions into those teenage years, is going to go through a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And what we thought about really hard before we did this was, I can be gone and working and doing all these things, and Sarah's going to fight these battles alone, and this is going to do this to us, right? Pull us apart.
Yeah.
Or we can fight this together and work together. And we bought a 22-foot transit van to travel in. And yeah, right when Corona hit, it's in the driveway. I call it the artery that's hemorrhaging in the driveway. It's hemorrhaging money, right? Yeah. It's just not doing anything. But we bought that to travel together. And it's hermetically sealed in the back, keeps the cancer stuff away from them, from the firefighting stuff. It's got plenty of room for them to put everything they want in it. And we're going to, and we've already started, do this journey, as you called it, together. Now, I'm going to have to work during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I come back to the hotel or whatever, guess who I'm going to see?
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting that. You know, I mean, you got to think, last year I was in 21 states. So yeah. That's a lot of time, adding that plus my full-time job, to be away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I was thinking about my dad. I was thinking about lots of other families that have been through divorces, and they did everything right. They worked hard, but that work had a cost. And I don't want it to be the cost of losing them. And the other part of it, Doc, is that I'm going to retire early. I'm supposed to retire at 50. I will take a 6% financial cut to retire at 48 years of age. But the reason I'm going to do it is because Emma will be 14. I will have 25 years and 10 months on the fire department. And I will have a few years at home with her between the time she goes to college, with my wife investing in both of them as we transition to empty nesters or whatever happens, instead of working 30 years and then all of a sudden coming home and she's in college and we're trying to figure out this whole transition together. Everybody I know that's been firefighters, the thing I've seen that messed them up a lot is they went wide open for 25 or 30 years and they came to a screeching halt. And then they're trying to figure out who they are, how things work at home. Your wife's had a system for 30 years and now you're in their way. I talk to more retiree couples, the wife says, find something for him to do. He's driving me crazy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So me, the blessing of being involved in the behavioral health side of things is seeing all that and going, you know what? I transferred to the airport a year and a half ago. I've spent 21 years running away from the airport. My wife said, you can be busy at home or you can be busy at work, but not both. I can't take both.
Yeah.
So can I have some say-so in your station assignment? So I went to the airport where I sleep at night. I stay busy during the day, but I come home most of the time well-rested, which is a big difference for me because I spent the first 20 years busy.
Yeah.
I'm busy here. I got to have something left over to give them. And guys that I know that have done busy stations and had full-time, part-time jobs, they're having fights at home because they ain't got any, they don't have any patience left. They're shortchanged on sleep. Sleep deprivation is the biggest cause of most of our problems.
Mm-hmm.
From like why I take a testosterone shot is because of 20 years of shift work. I found out I had that problem. I have sleep apnea. I got that fixed. I wear the famous elephant man machine now. All these different things you got to do because of our job. You want to find that out too late? No. Invest in your family. Invest in yourselves and realize, hey, she's playing on the playground right now. Pretty soon she's going to be in a car going to visit her friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I told her I'm starting a website called overprotecteddads.com. I've got a black vehicle with tinted windows, and I'm going to follow around with all my infrared technology and drones and put two laser sights on whoever I don't like. And I don't even own a gun. So there's my window. I've got it planned out if the good Lord allowed it. You know, he says man plans, God laughs. We'll see what happens. But we want to do this journey together, and I want to see what interests develop for her and what opportunities present themselves, what doors are open, what doors are closed, and where we get to go. And I'm not going to put stipulations on it. I just know that I need to be there. And I can't do that if I work 30, 35 years.
Right.
Gone, married, and got her own life at that point.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Hey, my son is in at the local community college here in Dayton, Sinclair Community College, taking Fire One classes. He's in his first semester. He's a combat veteran of the 82nd Airborne in the Army. He was spent 9 months in Afghanistan, came back a year ago, spent a little time trying to figure out what he wanted to do and things like that, and came to me and said, I need some advice. And I said, you know what, based upon what I know about you and your interest, you know, you're physically fit. You love the fitness part. You love the military camaraderie. You like to have goals. You like to chase after something. You like the intensity of some hard work. I go, why don't you be a firefighter and really check into it, you know? And a few weeks later, he enrolled in the school and has been loving it ever since. You know, he goes Tuesdays and Thursdays. And hopefully this coming spring, he'll finish Fire 2 and be ready to start a career. And for young guys like him, and his name's Donnie as well, but people starting that career, and I think you really talked about it during the whole podcast, but any words of wisdom to help them keep their eye on the true prize? What would you say is that true prize? Because, you know, so many times it's just bust through and get to retirement. But as we know, that's not it. But any advice for the young in the fire service today and the ones that are looking to go in?
If he's young and unattached and he doesn't have a significant other in his life, I would tell him to go to school, and I would tell him to get as much training and education and as many certifications as he can get and balance that out with some healthy free time away from the fire department. So, because it didn't make the fire department his whole life, have other hobbies that he develops now, whether it's physical fitness or other things, because you don't want your career to consume you. And when you retire, your fire chief of the lawnmower, and you can't handle it. You got to have other interests, because it's not, you know, we work so we can live. You shouldn't live to work. The very definition of male is in Hebrew is to do or to work or to give or that kind of thing. And so we're wired that way. But the thing is, that doesn't mean you have to do the same thing your whole life. He's obviously a servant-minded guy, so keep him active, keep him engaged, and keep him in good relationships when he's in that, and look for good firehouses that have good guys that are constantly training and doing stuff. Watch out for the guys that are spending more time partying and doing other things that are unhealthy that lead us into trouble.
Yeah.
I'm not saying having a good time is not a bad thing, but if they spend more time doing that stuff instead of, bye, sweetie, my wife's leaving. Instead of focusing on what's important, that'll lead them down a dark road, because the majority of firefighters struggle with alcoholism and marital issues and PTSD. And that starts early. It's a cumulative thing. You gradually start absorbing those problems at an early age.
Yeah.
What health is a big thing. Staying in shape, getting adequate sleep. If he can work one job, not two. The greatest advice I wish I would have paid attention to was live off your fire department income only. And that's very difficult to do. A lot of places don't pay very well. So if he can set himself up where he's only living off his fire department income, and when he starts getting comfortable with that, start putting that money away. A lot of departments offer something called an HSA, health savings account. Bankroll that money until he gets married. And when he gets married, he has all these different things, because fire departments typically allow pensions and good things. But it doesn't do any good if you never make it to that pension, right? So do those things, those early investments. And then when he decides to have a family, his certifications are done. He spent his years being busy. He can move into not a slow station, but more what I call a family environment. I was blessed to spend 7 years at a station that ran 7 to 10 calls a day. It was busy, but it wasn't as busy as some places that would have just tore me apart. So you have to find a healthy balance, like you talk about, of career and family, where I enjoyed that station a lot. They had good guys, good family-oriented guys. They all had the same values. We held each other accountable. We trained, we worked out. They were happy if they ran 2 calls or 20 calls.
Yeah.
That was an amazing 7 years for me. I hope and pray everybody can have that experience, but I will caution him on this. I talk to more firefighters who come in with passion and vigor and dedication, and they get around that negative, bitter, cynical person, and they poison that young firefighter. Because what they do is they sit here with this cup, and this is a cup of bitterness or poison. And I drink it, and I look at you, and I say, I hope you die. But I'm not killing you. You're killing me every day. And that bitter, cynical firefighter is not bitter and cynical because of one thing. It's years and years of stuff.
Yeah.
If you're around that person and that person is not willing to change, that's a toxic relationship. You need to get away from it. Because you got to realize our job, doctor, he's going to spend 24 hours with somebody indoctrinating him.
Yeah.
And if you have the right group, that's awesome. He gets the wrong group, he's going to have all kind of problems. Because the fire service doesn't do a good job of fixing behaviors. I can tell you that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have another ministry. We stink at helping ourselves and managing our own behaviors. We're great at taking care of everybody else. We're terrible at taking care of ourselves.
Yeah.
So if he can get around that accountability we talked about in the beginning, find good firefighters, even if they're not in his department, good role models to talk to when he struggles, and go to good conferences, and try to stay away from certain things. Always, when I take my guys to conferences and training, I say, you see that street right there? All those bars and all that stuff on. I said, I've been down that street. And it doesn't lead to anything productive.
Yeah.
So every one of you are married, including me, and you go down that street with no bad intention and end up divorced, I will fire you. I said, because our organization is based on living out a set of values, and I didn't bring you here to cheat on your wife.
Yeah.
And so he needs to be around people that will hold him in that account. And if he strays, can pull him back. There are good, awesome firefighters out there that will do that. But like I said in the beginning about judging a belief system that by the few that abuse it, there are a handful that will lead him down the wrong road, down to divorce, down to alcoholism, down to all kind of bad coping mechanisms. Stay away from that group. It's in every organization, not the fire service. Use good discernment on who he hangs out with. There's a great book called Lead Like Jesus, and it says if you want to know who you should hang out with, you can do a size up with somebody in 5 minutes. Are they a driven person or a called person? If you figure that out, that's how you determine who you hang out with. A driven person is somebody who's driven by greed, power. They don't do succession planning. They intimidate. They do not train other people. They're all about their position. And they push people away, and they always have all the answers, and no one else is right. You stay away from that person. A called person is all about succession planning, mentoring, my ceiling's your floor, everything I can do to make you better. It's about the mission, the message, not the messenger. He finds that group, that's the one he hangs out with. That's your 60-second size up with somebody of This is somebody I talk to about the weather with. This is someone who weathers all the extremities of life with.
Yeah.
And that's Phil Hodges and the guy who wrote The 1 Minute Manager and Who Moved My Cheese. So a lot smarter people than me. And I found a lot of wisdom in that.
Because that's great.
You know who to hang out with. And I'm telling you, the fire service is full of amazing people. And I think you'll have a wonderful career. Just make sure he knows who's holding the line with him. That's the only thing I can tell him.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. Yes. Hey, as we wrap up here, Andy, is there anything that I did not ask you that you wished I would have or that you would have liked to have spent more time on? I want to just sort of give you an open-ended moment.
No, I think you have an amazing opportunity to help people. And I think what the fire service and police and EMS is missing right now is the biggest problems we face are not the calls. It's inside the four walls of the fire station, the police station, or inside the ambulance than you're spending with that shift with that person. And you have a lot of time with those people and you have a lot of interactions where you can help them. And I think someone said it best, we need to be street psychologists. And you need to learn how to care for other members. And if I could change anything about the fire service, I wouldn't change the traditions and the dedications to training, pursuing knowledge and being better. I would change that they require us to have a better understanding of human beings and how to care for each other, like you said, self-care, than I would anything. And it would lead to longer careers. The divorce rate is high as 74% in some states for firefighters and police, highest in the world next to the military. Suicide rate second only to the military. And we have more behavioral health problems that we cause as a fire service because we expose all our members to these problems and we basically tell them to deal with it. We give them EAP and think they're going to get better in six sessions. They're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like having a sponsor in AA. Every year, I got to have somebody to talk to. I have to wring out this sponge that builds up with seeing dead children, decapitated people, abusive households, pit bulls killing kids. All this stuff that goes in your head does not need to stay there. And the only way you get that out and deal with that is having good people to talk to and being able to open up your feelings instead of open up a pill bottle or an alcohol bottle and drown in your troubles with it. That's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. And it's going to bleed through and you're going to go back for more, whether it's pornography, whether it's drugs, whether it's the arms of another woman or another person, you are looking for a way to kill the pain. And if I could change anything or ask you to do anything, I would wish that we could empower more police, fire, and EMS to care for them. Because I'll challenge you with this. You will see more behavioral health issues in the next 3 to 5 years due to the stuff that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because of corona and because of the fact that the world no longer respects nor cares for the people who risk their lives to protect them. And that's a dangerous place to be. And when you can't get in your car and go to work and think, I'm there to help them and they're going to try to kill me.
Right.
What kind of stress are those individuals under? My prayers every day are for our military, police, fire, and EMS and our leaders. Because the world has lost its mind and has decided, as Malcolm Muggeridge says, the 21st century man has decided to abolish himself. We have done that.
Yeah.
We are tearing ourselves apart. And the best way we can stop that is good people like you empowering others to live out their faith and their values and care for one another, not kill each other.
Yeah.
Build each other up, not burn buildings down, and lift each other up. And when they show that care, show a police or fire or EMS officer, somebody doing something good on the news instead of something evil. And quit focusing on the negative. Rick Lasky says it best. Anybody can catch somebody doing something wrong. Yeah. Catch them doing something right. And I think if you can do that and give firefighters and all these guys ways to better care for themselves, the dividends, as I told you before on Twitter, that you will receive One day you'll stand in heaven and look around and he'll show you all the people you got to help. That's your paycheck. That's what.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. Chief Andy Starnes as my special guest. And I'll tell you, I really appreciate your wisdom. This was incredible. And I appreciate you sharing your stories, being vulnerable, sharing a little bit about you and all of that. And, as a close, Andy, to close this podcast out, I would like to, or I invite you, don't need to, but it's just an invitation. If you would like to say a final blessing to the listeners and our first responders out there in the world.
Sure, sure. If you don't mind, I'll do that.
I'd love to. Go ahead.
All right. Lord, we thank you for this time together. We thank you for what you've done for us, what you're going to do for us. I thank you for Brother Donnie and his ministry and how he's helping people. A lot of people say these are careers. In my opinion, these are callings that you put on our heart. If you take your passion, it leads to your purpose, and you put that passion in his heart. I ask that you would inspire others to hear this today to be passionate and be compassionate, which means to suffer with people, not cause people to suffer. I ask you to reach out and touch them and think of ways they can help other people. They can help their organization. They can make a difference in this world instead of tearing this world apart. We live in the greatest country in the world, and we have the greatest opportunities before us, and we're acting like a whole different group of people right now because there's a lot of people hurting. And the best way we can help hurting people is through compassion and love and not hatred and anger and all the stuff that we see right now. Help people like Dr. Donnie, help the fire, police, EMS, and the good people of this world that want to help. Give them the tools, the power, the compassion, the love, and most of all, the endurance to basically hold the line, to endure to the end so they shall be saved by saving others. We ask these things not because we're worthy, not because we've done anything that allows us to be heard, but because Jesus held the line. He carried that burden, and he didn't give up when everyone persecuted him and did everything to him. He knew the cost, and yet he stayed there until the end. Came back and said, I have got victory over the grave. And because I live, you shall live also. In your name we pray.
Amen. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.